I Really Hate My In-Laws by Edworth the Crazy Man. My wife is amazing. She's been there for me in the very worst times of my life, always with a set of encouraging words. We started out as friends, and I highly recommend that route for those of you looking for love. If you can call your significant an asshole without them showing a fit, you've got a keeper. There's just one issue. It's her parents. Most men in the media are depicted as having strained relationships with their in-laws, to be sure. This is different. They were never outright cruel, but they creep me out. It probably has something to do with my father-in-law's profession. Paul makes dolls. Well, marionettes, really. And he makes pretty penny doing it too. You'd be surprised to learn the sorts of things that rich people spend their money on. It was the most recent visit over to their house. It really set me over the edge though. We pulled a little sausage fat baby from the car seat in the back. There was a wide red mark around the length of his round face. He'd fallen asleep hard, and the impression on the skin served the perfect receptacle of his spittle. He began to stir as I began bobbing him slowly awake. Hey little guy. Being a dad still felt alien, but I loved him. As the wife removed the diaper bag from the backseat, see the gray-haired parents poke their raisin faces out of the front door. They waved us over, and I began taking hesitant steps up the old ranch-style house. We moved into the house, and the smell around me changed, nearly suffocating me. Elderly dead skin cells bathed in my lungs. I had to get out. I sat next to my wife on the ancient couch, sending up a puff of dust particles. I tried to cover my baby's face with my hand without anyone noticing. I did not want him breathing on the ungodliness that was stuck in the recesses of these couch cushions. Eggnog? Asked my mother-in-law, Elaine. Of course. I forced a smile as she handed me the crystalline glass. I passed my son off to my wife and took a slow sip of the thick white stuff. Good. I grinned wryly at her. Whoever had made the eggnog had decided that the ratio of 60% alcohol was a good idea. I can't disagree, as I finished the glass off and set it on the nearby table. I felt better. It was swimmy and warm. The fireplace crackled and forced a jump out of me. You need to calm down. Elaine refilled my glass. Thank you. I held the glass for perhaps a minute before it was gone. Paul strained his popping knees from the armchair and moved to the hallway. Looking over his shoulder, he spoke to me. You want to help me out? I knew what that entailed. I had really wished I would not have to look at that room. I choked my words. Of course. As I stood, I could feel my wife squeeze my hand, reassuring me. When I looked down on the couch, I could see she was shooting me a look. You know you need to calm down, said that look. I nodded at her. I moved to follow her father as he waddled down the hall. Paul spoke without looking at me. Got a new piece of wood down in the basement. I need your help with it. I can't move it myself. I hope you don't mind. No, I don't mind. I clenched my jaw and I could hear the blood pumping in my skull. Throb, throb, throb. As he opened the basement door to the infinite blackness, I grew dizzy. The alcohol in the eggnog was really doing its business. We made our way down the steps slowly, him lumbering ahead and me wavering behind as he clicked the basement light. I could see what he meant. There was a huge piece of what might have been driftwood, perhaps 6 foot in length, had to be 200 pounds. It did not occur to me to ask him. How did he gotten the thing in the basement in the first place? Without much ado, we squatted and momentarily fought to tilt it so it would more easily shift up to the stairs to the ground floor. By the time we reached the top of the steps, I could see my small family and Elaine sitting near the fireplace and moving, heads cocked to watch the flames. After shutting the basement doors, we shimmed awkwardly towards the open doorway at the very end of the hall. I could see the dolls just barely through the threshold. Goose flesh was already springing up in my arms like mad.
Whoa there, careful now,
said Paul, giving me a warm smile. There was something else there too. I could just make out that his expression was sending me a telepathic message, something along the line of, you better not put a fucking hole in my wall, kid. Sorry, I felt small.
It's alright.
We stepped into the room, surrounded by all all dead eyes. Eyes that I see in my dreams. Eyes that could put a spell on me. Eyes drawn from the deepest parts of hell. The dolls hung from every open space, set up on every possible surface. Most of them dressed in Victorian England's attire, but some of them were more contemporary. A construction worker here, a businesswoman there. As we squatted to set a large piece of driftwood onto the floor, it felt as though microscopic bugs were boring their way in through my flesh. I could feel them. This was easily the largest room in the whole house. It was Paul's workshop. The floor was covered in sawdust and splatters of paint. Against the wall was the workshop stations with wood sharpening tools. Even if I did hate the dolls, I couldn't help but admire his current project. It was a life-size marionette doll, and it seemed that he had already carved out the hollows of the eyes. I shivered. The shapes of the arms and the legs were impeccable. His handiwork was worth taking notice of, I suppose. He settled onto his stool at his workstation, waving me over. He took up a foreign blade and began shaving off pieces of the doll's arms, forcing it to take the shape of a true-to-life human. It was an unsettling moment watching him do it. He crackled at me. I thought for sure my dolls made you uncomfortable.
No, I lied. They're really quite something from a certain angle. I guess
I was fidgeting and could feel the heat coming off me again. I wanted to fall out of there, in the floor, right then and there, with all those fucking eyes on me. It felt like they were all following me. Every micro expression, they were judging my movements. I was under extreme scrutiny. He chuckled.
It's an art form, really.
It takes a lot of practice to get it just so. He grunted as he hit a specifically difficult piece from raised wood.
Relax, you're family.
I'm going to sit in the family room. He waved me off and I left the damnable room. As I returned to the den, I settled onto the couch and Elaine refilled my glass of eggnog.
You look so flushed, said the wrinkled old screw.
Yeah, added my wife. Are you alright?
She bobbed our little boy on her leg. He grinned stupidly, eyeing me over. For the briefest moment, it felt as though he'd had his eyes replaced with those of long dead marionettes. I blinked and wiped my hands along my slacks.
I'm fine. I downed two more glasses of eggnog as I put the dolls out of my mind.
The smell of slow cooking roast wafted through the home, and I was getting wasted. The shadows in the home grew long. Our baby took up an imaginary game crawling beneath the Christmas tree. Elaine and my wife took up chatting about this and that, and I kept my full attention on the flames of the fireplace. Paul worked continuously in his workshop. He always did that. He was always working. Forever the artist, I guess. Something like that. My vision was growing blurry, and I excused myself to the kitchen. The floor of the house creaked beneath my feet. It was an old house. I hunkered down in front of the stove and inspected the ropes. I was beginning to get drunk munchies. It did look so good. I found the punch bowl containing the eggnog and found the half-empty bottle of whiskey sitting next to the bowl. I poured more liquor into it and looked over my shoulder to be sure no one would see me press my mouth on the edge of the bowl and lift it up. After wiping my mouth, I checked the amount of time left on the old school timer. I sighed, moved on to the living room again, settling into the couch next to my wife. I wish they had a TV. I fell asleep and was roused by the sound of the cooking timer. We gathered to the kitchen, helping Elaine set the table. I felt warm, and my thoughts of the marionettes were momentarily forgotten. As Paul entered the kitchen, wiping his hands down in front of his carpenter's apron, he greeted us with a warm smile and began carving the roast. The sounds of knife and forks clinging against the beautiful white china plates filled the air, and I ate ravenously.
So, Paul addressed me from the opposite side of the table. How's your little stories going?
I swallowed hard. My stories?
Yes, your little stories. The things you write about, you know.
He waved his knife in a circular motion as though to accentuate his point.
Those little made-up fancies you put on paper.
Father!
Said the wife. I put my hand on her knee to assure her that I'd not been offended.
I'm sorry, said Paul.
I wiped at my mouth with the cloth napkin provided.
It's fine, you're fine, I shrugged. Could be better.
could be worse. Pointed his knife at me while chewing. That's because you produce fiction. You produce gross approximations. His shoulders relaxed. I just wish someone would follow in my way. It would be nice to have another puppet maker. In a family, you'd be creating reality. He slammed his glass against the table and snapped his fingers. You'd be creating something better than reality. I felt small all over again. His expression gave me the same sensation I'd had in a doll room. I was under extreme scrutiny. I exposed my teeth sheepishly. We finished our meal in silence. I continued to drink. After regathering in the family room, my wife mentioned in passing while yawning,
I think we'd better stay tonight. I'm too tired to drive home.
And she twisted in her seat to look me over. I don't think you're in any shape to drive. I wish you weren't right. Elaine rose.
I'll make sure the guest room is ready for you two then. I think Paul can break out your old crib for the little one.
Thank you, mother. My wife snuggled tiredly into my biceps while yawning again.
I was shaking. I did not want to stay the night. I didn't even want to be in the house.
I stood. No. Elaine flinched and I said, I can't drive. I stood and took a step forward and nearly staggered over. Elaine put her cold, bony hand on my collarbone.
Don't be silly. You can leave in the morning. It's all fine. I'll even let you use one of my weighted blankets. It's very snuggly.
Time passed and we dressed down in the guest room. And my wife reached out to grab my elbow after I settled our son into the old crib. He tiredly stretched and was quick asleep. My wife whispered in my ear, can you please stop acting so weird around my parents?
I'm sorry, okay? I don't know why they make me so nervous. I can't put my finger on it.
Most men get nervous around their in-laws, right? She kissed my neck from behind as I looked at our unmoving son in the crib. I guess.
We bedded down and just as Elaine had promised, there was a nice fluffy weighted blanket waiting there for us. We folded it out and quickly entangled ourselves together beneath it. I tried the old push my groin against her butt maneuver. She giggled. Not here.
Yeah. I did it once more and quickly fell asleep. I felt a set of hands grab for my ankles in the bed and another set of hands pinned my wrist down. I couldn't make a sound. There was something over my mouth. I wanted to scream. I wanted to let the whole world know that our parents were finally going to be the death of me. My eyes shut around in all directions and I could see that Paul was quickly binding my arms to the bedpost. My wife was nowhere to be seen. Elaine had my ankles, and no matter how hard I tried kicking her off, I could not relinquish her grasp. Her nails dug into my shins, and I swear I could feel my warm, thick blood begin to spring out into the bed covers.
How are you doing with your little stories? Asked Paul.
I attempted a muffled response, but nothing came. They grinned in the darkness, and I could see the glint of their cold metallic teeth. Then they fed on me. Her on my legs and Paul on my face. It dug into my flesh and the boiling hot pain shot through my body like electricity. I could do nothing in defense. I could not fight them off. I was hoping to die there in that bed. I knew it. They wanted to kill me. What had I done to my poor wife and child? I tore my face from Paul's and the ripping of my cheek muscles and his clenched teeth made a sickening popping sound. I whipped my head to peer into the threshold of the guest room. Standing in the doorframe was my wife, and she was holding our son, rocking him back and forth. Go to sleep. Go back to sleep. Don't worry, said my wife. If you give in, it'll be over sooner. She flipped on the light, and for the first time, I could see the macabre mess of gore before me. Her parents had already devoured the majority of my body. I was little more than a set of falling bones of sopping viscera soaking into the bedsheets. I could not fathom how I was still alive. My head rolled clear off my body with one soft snapping motion from Paul's strong, calloused hands. He carried me through the house under one arm. I'm going to make something that's better than reality, you understand? He said. Given that I was no more than a severed head, I could neither nod nor shake. He moved me to his workstation and secured my head to a person-sized marionette. He lifted me with the strings and danced me around the room while standing atop his stool. All the while they laughed manically at my misfortune. I screamed as my newfound arms and legs did things on their own, or rather of his volition. I screamed myself awake and kicked away the blanket off my sweating body. My white t-shirt and boxers clung to my body. I was drenched in sweat, still shaking from the nightmare I had. After a cursory glance, I could see that the room was still dark. It was nighttime, but both my wife and child were gone. After I looked at the edge to be sure no lurker beneath would snatch my ankles, I hopped off the bed and scurried to the open doorway leading into the hall. I could hear the old Bing Crosby tune. Was everyone else awake? How strange. I moved down the hall. I need a glass of water. I need to calm down. As I came to the edge of the family room, I could see they were gathered there, barely illuminated by the bulbs of the Christmas tree. Paul and Elaine in their recliners, my wife and the child on the couch, my shoulders relaxed. I was being ridiculous. Of course. I approached them hesitantly. Ah, you've decided to join us. Paul twisted in his seat to catch me out of the corner of his eye. Something was off. Something just wasn't right. The uncanny valley was screaming at me. I reached out for the light switch. Come on, said Paul. Join us. This is better than reality. I flipped the light switch on, illuminating the awful filed in the dark. My son hopped off the couch and began running around in happy little circles. He doesn't know how to walk. The wire extending from his body towards the ceiling controlled his every move. My wife's mouth cackled open, all wood and painted. Her eyes shot from left to right, as dead as the material they were made from. Come on, honey. Her jaw moved sporadically. Paul stood without exactly touching the ground. They were puppets. They were all puppets. I nearly voided my bowels on the spot. I screamed. I felt the whole world spin around me. My eyes shot to the door leading from the house. Paul then wrenched it open, pelting down the driveway barefoot. I nearly stepped and dove into the SUV, but I had no pants. I didn't have keys. Within my moment's hesitations, I looked over my shoulder and could see my in-laws waving at me. Come again, called Paul, as his wired body caught in the breeze like a wind chime. I will not visit them again.